Okay, so today we're going to do, we start, hopefully finish, I don't know, a very, very strange series of Agadotot, which I think most people who study Agadotot, or most people in general, ignore, because, well, for reasons that will become obvious in a minute. Okay. So if you remember, last week we did the Moshe Rabbeinu Rabbi Akiva Gemara. Then we noted that that Gemara leads into a brief little halachic statement, right? Namely, Shiva Otiyot Tzrichot Shlosha Ziyunin. Right? There are seven letters that need crowns. Ve'eluhen, Shatnez Getz. Right? Those are the Shatnez Getz letters, right? Meaning Shin, Ayin, Tet, Nun, Zayin, Gimel, Tzadi. Amar of Ashi, Chazinelu L'Sifrei, Tugane, I've seen the precise Sifrei Torah. To be Rav, dechatru legage dechet. It's not entirely clear what that means. It's a machlokes.
Where are we exactly?
Right in the middle of the Gemara of Chatas and Beis, where we basically where we left off. Right, like right
before.
Yep. Vitalu lekare dehei. Chatru legage dechet, right, which is, if you can see in Tosos on the right hand side, the two chets, it means one of those. Okay, you see those pictures? What it means is one of these, right? Okay, one of those. But here's where we start getting. The Gemara says, "Why do you do that?" Klomar chai hu beromo shel olam, meaning to say that God lives chai, right, chet, in the heights of the world. And they hang the leg of the hay. Again, slightly different pictures of what that looks like, as you see in Tosos over here. As Rehuda Hanasi had asked from Riyami, my dechsev, what does the pasuk mean? Bitchuva Hashem adayad, rely, trust in Hashem forever. Ki beka Hashem tzur olamim, because in Yud Hay. Right, which really means, right, I mean, that's because Hashem's name, but the way the Gemara reads is, Bekah, B'yurei, Hashem created the worlds. Amar Leh, he said, Kol atolah bitchono b'HaKadosh Baruch Hu, harelo machseb olam hazel olam haba. Anyone who has trust in God, so he will be protected in this world and the next. Amar Leh, Anikachikagashaleh, he said, this is what I'm asking you. Maishna dechsev b'Bekah. Viloksiv ka. What does it mean? With God. Right? Bi ya. With God. Rather than just, right, yud hey, meaning God created the world. So kididarish of Yehuda Baravilai Elu Shne Olamoda Kadosh Baruch Hu Shabarak Kadosh Baruch Hu Echod Behave Echod Biyud. The God created two worlds, this world and the next, and he created them not. God created them. You don't read it that Ka Bara Olam was. God created it with the letters Yud and He. One with the He and one with the Yud. And I don't know if this world is created with the world to come was created with a yud. Am I driving you away? I'm sorry.
No.
Okay. And this world is created with a hay. Im ha'olam hazeh b'yud, va'olam haba b'hay. Or if this world is created with a yud, and the world to come with a hay. K'shu omer eileh toldot hashamayim va'aretz b'hi baram. So when the pasuk says these are the right generations of the world when they were created, but it says b'hi baram, al tikri b'hi baram. Don't read it as they were created. Ella b'hay biram. They were created with the letter hey. Have a omer ha'olam hazeh b'hay va'olam haba b'yud, which means that this world was created with a hey, and the world to come was created with a yud. Weird enough yet. It's not done. And why was this world created with a hay? Because it's like
a hostel.
It's an achsadra. It's like a gazebo. Shekola rotz lazeh yatza. Whoever wants to leave can leave because there are doors. Anyways, meaning if you want to sin, you can just get out of there. Just like a hay, you can escape from every direction. Umay taima talia kare. Let's just read some of the weird thing. It continues getting weird. 1 second. Umay taima talia kare. Why is its leg hanging? Di hadar b'tshuva ma'ili lei. So that if he does tshuva, he can come in and get back in through the hay, the top of the hay, over here. So, sorry. Right? That part of the hay. Right? And he says, well, I don't understand. Why do you have to get in through the side? V'leo bahach. The hay has a hole in the bottom. If Russia wants to get back in, let him crawl in through the bottom. So Gemara says, lo mistayim elsa, it won't work. The Reish Lakish, like Reish Lakish said, Amar Reish Lakish, my dechsev im lalaitim hu yalit, v'anavim mitim chayin. If he is a jester, he will be a jester, and if to the humble ones, he will give grace. Balitayar mesayino so, balitami poschen lo. If one wants to purify himself, we help him. You want to go in the impure path, we open it up for you. Umay taima is like taga. And why does it have a keter and a little crown on the top? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, im chozer bo ani kosher lo kesher. If he comes back, I'll tie a little crown on his head. V'bnei ma nivra olam haba b'yud. And why is it olam haba created with a yud? V'bnei shen tzadikim shebo muatim. Because the people who make it into olam haba are small. There aren't so many, like a yud. V'nimei ma kaf of rosha. Why is a yud bent over? V'bnei shen tzadikim shebo kaf of roshem v'bnei ma'asein shenun domen zelazeh. Because the tzadikim in it are bent over because everyone is a tzadik in a different way, so they're embarrassed of the greatness of the other people. Amar Rav Yosef Hani Tartemili, Amar Rav Bisvarim, Vitanya Kavase. Oh no, that's right, that's it. That's the end of the Agadata. Okay? What do you do with this?
Kabbalah.
What? So what do you do with this? Tell me. Look at this Gemara. What do you do? Methodologically. The world is sit. The Agadata, sit. The world is created with a yud and a hay. The world to come yud. Why a yud? Because it's small. Why is it yud bent over? Because tzaddikim are embarrassed from each other. And this world is created with a hay so that anyone who wants to be evil can just escape from the holes of the hay. And if he wants to get in, he can get in, but only through the top, but he can't come in through the bottom. What do you do with this Gemara? So good, but come on, methodologically. Remember, this is the goal. Methodologically speaking.
The nature of the world.
What?
Like if you look from the side, the bottom part of the
world. Let's start. Literal, metaphorical, homiletic. What? What is it? Good. So Rafi says what I would have said. My guess is, I don't know what's going on. This is a very cute drasha. This is what we call homiletics. This is, right, remember. Remember Rabbi Menachem Rambam, he said, some agadatot are allegorical, meaning they hide deep secrets, and some of them are homiletics. What's homiletics? Rabbi verts, right? Inspiring, shalosh shudas teicha, okay? Right? Nice, makes you feel good, not really pshat, no one thinks it's pshat, right? But like, it's a nice thing to say, it has important ideas there. Right? Meaning, if I rephrased it and said, it's very easy to become a rasha, it's very hard to do tshuva, but it's possible. But when you do tshuva, you can't simply retrace your steps. You got to rethink it, right? That's actually a nice advice. Attaching that to the structure of the hay is what we call a homiletic, right? A drasha, a shulvort, a shal shudasvort, whatever. That would be one direction. What would the other direction be? Where's Yosef? I need Yosef for this one. Yosef.
I was going to go look for these.
Good. What's the other direction?
Metaphorical.
Oh, metaphorical. What's the other direction? There's always another direction here. Come on, Yosef, I need you. Literal thing. Sit down. Sit.
Going through the top of the head.
Literal. Oigefalt. Now, Oren is like, I don't know what's going on. So here, let me give you all a heart attack. So, one of the earliest svarim that we have. So early that we have no idea how early it was written. The approximations go from the Gaonic period to Avram Avinu. I kid you not, that is an actual suggestion. The Gaonim actually thought it was written by Avram. Right, that's how old this book is. It's a book called Sefer Yetzirah. What is Sefer Yetzirah? So, according to the Kabbalists, it is Kabbalistic. According to the rationalists,
it's rational.
It is a rational book of early philosophy. Hence, there is a parish on it both by Rav Sajja Gaon, who is a rationalist, and it is the earliest Kabbalistic text that we actually have, right? Meaning actually Kabbalistic, like says it's Kabbalistic, meaning not just mystical, right? Kabbalistic means specifically belonging to the Kabbalistic traditions, right? Is the commentary on Sefer Yetzirah by a person who you've never heard of but is very important to know, named Yitzhak Sagina Hor, or in English, Isaac the Blind, who is the Zaken HaMikubalim. He is the Zaken HaMikubalim. He is the grandson of the Ravid, and he is the Ramban's grand Rebbe in Kabbalah. His students from Ezra and Azrael of Gerona were the people who basically started popularizing Kabbalah in Catalonia, in Spain, right? And this is the first evidence we have of the existence of the specific traditions of what makes it into what is known as Kabbalah. I mean, not like general mystical traditions, but the first written evidence we have of these traditions is a letter from Rav Yitzchak Sagi Nahor to the Ramban, a correspondence between them. So he's very, very important. And that's where we discover that the father of Kabbalah at the time was considered the Ravid, right? The Ravid was considered Zaken HaMikubalim before him.
One that comments in the
shirt. Yeah, that one. Yeah, him. Exactly. That's why it's that's why this is an important letter, because we discover that it's the Ravid, that our Kabbalistic traditions, the one that like the major Kabbalist in Rishonim, right, were basing themselves on, were traditions from the Ravid, right? Right? And therefore, when you try to figure out, right, what are the channels of these Kabbalistic traditions, they come through pretty heavy hitters, right? And this is how we know it, from this letter of Yitzchak Sagi Nahor, Isaac the Blind, and his Kabbalistic work that we still have evidence of is his commentary on, no, I just said, on Sefer Yetzirah, which I hope, wherever Gavi is, I hope that there is an excellent dissertation that was written at Harvard a few decades ago, on this commentary written by Rabbi Dr. Meir Sender, who is an interesting person. He's both a Kabbalist, practicing mystic, like reads auras, does meditation classes, stuff like that, and a Talmud of the Rav, and has a PhD from Harvard in medieval Jewish history, and did it on this. He's a very fascinating person. He was the Rabbi Gavi Shul for many years, and now he lives in Tzfat. I emailed him. I have to follow up with him. I have to remember to follow up with him.
Tzfat, like the capitalist city.
Well, now he does. He just moved from Sharon like 2 years ago. Anyways. What?
It's like a capitalist city.
Well, Kabbalah, in technical terms, refers to a specific mystical tradition. Right? That which... right, believes in 10 Sefirot, for example, rather than the mystical traditions you have in Ashkenaz that believe in 3 emanations rather than 10.
Three
emanations.
The Sefirot?
No, not the Sefirot. Right, in the Ashkenazi mystical schools, they believed in 3 emanations, which they called not Sefirot. They had other terminology for it. So, Kabbalah, we mean specifically these traditions, the Sefirot and things like that. Okay, but in that book... right, which, like I said, is super early and was very respected by both the Kabbalist and the rationalist. Because it's super, super early, but no one knows what it means. This is how it starts. Bishloshim ushtayim tivot pliot chokhma chakak ka Hashem tzvakot Elokei Yisrael ukim chayim umelech olam kel shakai rachum v'chanon ram v'nisa shochen ad v'kadosh shmo marom v'kadosh hu barad olamo b'shloshah svarim v'sefer v'sefer v'sipur. With the 32 amazing paths of wisdom, God, all types of descriptions of God, engraved the world with 3 books. The book, and the story. I didn't say I understood, Sefer Yetzirah. By the way, you know that piyut that is almost never said in Israel, but is said in America, in Chutz La'aretz, several times a year, of Ya'eli, You ever wonder what Bintivot Lev means? It does not mean the pathway to the heart. It means Bintivot HaLamed Bet. It's this line, Bishloshim Ushtayim Nitivot, right? It is the 32 paths of Sefer Yetzirah. It's not Lev, it's Lamed Bet, just so you know. Yes. And so what are these 32 paths? So he says, Eser Sfirot Bli Ma V'Yashvim Ushtayim Otiyot. 10 Sfirot, which the Kabbalists believe is the Sfirot. Non-Kabbalists believe that might just mean the 10 basic digits, numbers, 1 through 10, right? Plus the 10, like meaning 1 through 10. No, numbers and letters, yes, numbers and letters. Yisod Shalosh Amod V'Shev Kfulot Ushtayim Esrei Pshuta. What? Emanation. I don't know what that means. Okay, Then in Perek Bet it says, Esrim u'shtaim otiyot, Yisod shalosh amot v'sheva kfulot u'shtem esrei pshutot. Says you have different letters, right? You have the straight letters and the bent letters, etc. Shalosh amot emesh, Yisodan kav zechut v'kav chova v'loshen chok machriya b'intayim. If you have any idea what I'm talking about, you are way ahead of me. But in the simple pshat is that if you keep reading through Sefer Yetzirah, Esrim u'shtaim otiyot yisod chakikan, the 22 letters, he established the world. Mishnah Gimel there. Esrim u'shtaim otiyot yisod chakikan b'kol. Dalet, Esrim u'shtaim otiyot yisod kavan b'galgal. Right, with these letters, he put them in the sky. Right? The simple pshat of this. So, from this, does it sound like, in some sense, it is literal that the world was created with the letters?
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. So Rasajigon, remember the rationalist here? He actually does sort of sound like he actually thinks the world was somehow created with the letters, but the way I read him, though I can't prove this, is that he doesn't think that the like the specific drasha, like the world's created with a hey or a yud, it just means like, I don't know what it means, God created the world with words, I don't know what that, or something like that, right? These actual drasha, these specific drasha are homiletics, but the general idea that God created the world like letters and words, right? This is somewhat allegorical and somewhat literal, right? Yeah.
If God created the world with something, that means he needed to have created that first.
Well, I mean, we don't mean he created the world, the Torah says he created it with words, so it's not crazy to say that means letters in some way.
He created the words before the world.
I mean, I can't promise you I know what I'm talking. What I'm going.
I guess.
But let me just read you what he says in Rasajya. He says, because here's what he says: Bika b'shnei shemot elu bara shnei olamot. Where he says Bika Hashem, it doesn't mean with the letters. What does it really mean? That with like the two attributes of God that are expressed through his names of Ka and Yud Kei Vav Kei, he created the world. Shneamar b'Ka Hashem Tzurulamim Tzurulamim Shneim Olam Zevul Maba Kishmo Otan Shalosh Shemot Hava Hove Hayavi Yen. He said, "What does that mean?" We said, "What are the names that the Gemara picks? The name that represents God's eternity, right? Hayahu Vevi. Yeah, that's what is hinted at by Shem Hashem." Right, so he says, "Mashma shalosh lishonot lahabal shavar v'yaganeged gimel bamim kadosh kadosh kadosh." So, what does it sound like? He says, "He sounds like this is maybe the specifics are homiletics, but at some level there's a truth to this, right? Meaning it's not." Rav Sajja sounds like this is somewhat allegorical, right? Meaning God created the world. It doesn't mean with the yod and the hey. It means.
The
ideas of the Yud and the Hey, and what are the ideas of the Yud Hey names? Yud Hey and Yud Hey Vav Hey, right? What are the names? Yeah, that God is eternal, right? God's eternity was expressed in the creation of the world. That sort of.
What does that mean? If the world is physical and it's not eternal.
It's, God, the eternal being, created a world, right? I don't know exactly what that means. I don't necessarily know what I mean, but it's clear that Rasajja is taking what sounds sort of literal in Sefer Yetzirah and taking it as more reflective ideas, and maybe the specific drashot are just homiletics, but the general ideas are some allegorical, philosophical truth.
The world was great. Right? Yod and
a
hey.
Hmm.
That's what we're talking about.
Yes, that one. Right? That's Rasajja Goad.
How are the Yod and the hey created?
And therefore he says. Right, and therefore he says, Uvidrash. Right, 1 second, guys. And then he says later, he says, Uvidrash Darish Haosios, Vitsurasan Lama Kadisa Barakabona. The letters themselves we have drashed about. Right, it sounds like he's saying, look, the fact that the words and the ideas reflected by the names of God, that was created the world, that's some deep philosophical truth. The drashot on the specific letters, they're drashot.
What was the drashot?
Right? That God created Olam Haba with a Yud, and Olam Hazeh with a Hey. So that's one possibility. That this is not literal, right? It's allegorical, mixed in with a bit of homiletics. Right? That's basically Rav Sajja. The Ramban, who is a Kabbalist, doesn't sound that way. Because this is how he reads it. Chakikan. What does it mean that God engraved the world with the letters? Kol os ve'os sheba chakak. Each letter then is he engraved, the chatzvan, shechotzev lahafrid zo mizo, Shaklan, he measured them, etc. Vehemi Ran Zubazu, he mixed them up. Tsarfan Zivukam Ozimos, he mixed the letters up. Vitsar Bahensior Nefesh Kol Yitzur, and used them to create all souls. Ruchot Unishamot Shehin Ba'olam. Hatid Latsura Tidol Itzayer Lechadesh. I don't understand anything I just said. Right? Except it sounds like to me that the Kabbalistic read of this, remember, right, he's a grand Talmud of Yitzhak Sagi Nahor, who wrote a commentary on this, right, is that at some level, what does it mean? Literally, yeah. Yeah, literally, God, like, created the world through the letters. What does that mean? I have no clue.
Is the letter physical?
I don't know what that means.
If you're asking, what does it mean? Obviously, it seems like you're assuming that it's not literal.
Okay, not quite literal, meaning it. Okay, it's metaphorical, but like it actually has something to do with the letters. Not like this reflects an idea. It's
the letter itself.
Wait, in some lens, the letter itself, again, it's not literal, like God took an aleph and banged it against a wall, the world created, but like, he does sort of say, now, by the way, this is like the Ramban's theory at the beginning of the Torah, which is, Kol HaTorah Kula is one big shame Hashem. Do I know what that means? No, I don't know what that means either, right?
That would take a really long time.
But Kabbalists really do think there's like power in the letters. Again, it's somewhat literal. I mean, he really does think that letters have like metaphysical power. He doesn't mean like a letter that I wrote down, but like the letters have some sort of metaphysical, will have some sort of metaphysical force to them, right? So it's somewhat literal, somewhat metaphorical, somewhat mystical. I don't really know, right? Yeah.
So like all the letters has like some kind of like attribute to them. Like,
so he
like the ability to do this or whatever.
You know, when and you then, say zivugam osim os, right? Which zivug is the language usually used for like a husband and a wife, like they. He mated the letter. I don't know. Like, there's something mystical going on here, and I don't know what it is.
So in all the letters are like all the possible attributes, and then every person has like a mishmash of all of different attributes,
maybe,
which is represented by letters.
But what I would say is so far what we've seen is that, Rusajigon takes the position that this is sort of generic philosophical ideas, and the drashot are homiletic. I think that's how I'd read Rusajigon. Right, the specifics are. The Ramban, the mystical idea, is closer to literalism, meaning it is really the letters, right? There's certain powers in the, maybe the ideas of the letters, so it's somewhat metaphorical, but it's the letters, right? Like, there's actually something, like, power in the metaphysical idea of an aleph and a hey. I do not...
I'd love for your...
The words that are coming out of my mouth, I don't necessarily understand, okay? But I'm just reading for you, okay? Yeah.
So, we have this. Basically, the argument comes down to some power that the letters themselves, like, sort of represent, or is this whole letters thing just not.
Which is the homiletic, yes, exactly. Yeah.
Homiletic and allegorical are the same thing.
No.
No,
allegorical means it stands in for a philosophical idea. Homiletic means, like, in a real way, right? Homiletic just means, no, like, I'm just using this as a nice drasha, but this is not pshat. Allegorical means like this actually reflects some philosophical truth. Homiletic means what I'm saying is just like a cutesy way of getting an idea across, right? It's not like
it could be philosophical.
Yeah, it could be anything, but it means the what I'm saying. There's no an allegory actually reflects truth, right? Meaning there's a philosophical idea that actually emerges from these words, rather than here's a nice mnemonic, here's a nice cutesy way of sounding. This is not pshat, right? For the Ramban, the world in some sense was actually created through yuds and hays, whatever that means, right? If you say just a homiletic, you're saying the world isn't created between a yud and a hay, right? The hay doesn't look like a hay to let tzaddikim, right, to let rishayim fall out of it and then crawl back in, right? For the Ramban, it might actually mean that, right? Hay is built into the world, so that is like the fabric of the world is hayness. Right? I don't know what that means. I think. Okay. Now, Rashi is, if perhaps, in many ways, the most literalist here. Yes. Often, yes. Because Rashi says, 1 second, Chalak es Shimo. He took his name, divided it up, Vehetif mikol osh shlolosh tipin, and took three drops from every letter. Umeosen tipin nasa ma'im ve'esh ve'avir. Then from those drops in his name, he made water, fire, and air. Vikol ha'olam kulo, and the whole world. V'chein kasu v'sefer yitzirah. So, if you want a clearly, just straight up literalist read, that's Rashi, right? Rashi takes Sefer Yetzirah, right, and says, yeah, this is what it means. Like, God took his name, ground it up, right, took some drops, turned it into fire, water, and air, and built the world.
So here
we have literal, metaphysical Kabbalah, generic philosophical idea, and homiletical. Okay? Well, there are your possibilities, right? And they are basically taken by
everybody.
Big names, like, you know, Rashi, Rasajagon, and the Ramban. These are not like, you know, of all the things, I'm not like struggling here for names. I'm struggling to understand anything I said. But methodologically speaking, I know what the directions I was going to take, and I could have predicted that somebody would say it. Yeah.
Second question. So is Rashi saying that this is the name of the name, like the name just sort of existed? Like this. This name there was.
What?
Like, was this name something that Hashem created to then grind up? Or was this name pre-existing there? Or do you have no clue?
There you go.
Wait, I just wonder, is this name like giant, like pop-up letters? Or like a physical letter? Or is it like a non-physical?
Oh, I don't know. So I'll give you one more shot and then we'll move on to another part of the Agadita, okay? Okay? The H.C. Yosef, in his commentary, says that I have a pshat. Right, he rejects this uber literalist read, which is God ground up the letters and built the world. Okay, Sharei Olam Nivra b'Ma'amar, because the world is created by words. Eitz Yosef is one of the commentaries on the in Yaakov. Ela Kavanahi Sharei Shmotav Shal Kodesh Baruch Hu Morim Kol Echad Al Mida Zu Al Shefam Yuchad. Right, he moves in the allegorical direction. He says, no, every letter reflects a certain mida of God. Ukshamu Shabarb Od Ploni Hainu Shemena Koach Vashefa Shemura Lavod. Right, meaning the power that is reflected by that letter, the meaning that it sort of allegorically or metaphysically maybe captures. I don't know if this is a mystical read or an allegorical read. I'm not sure. But you basically see the range, right? Where you know there's a weird Gemara, so there's going to be the literalists, there's going to be the allegorical reads, there's going to be the homiletic rereads, right? And there's going to be, you know, everything in between. Okay? Good. Now, there are a lot of different things that we can do once we've gotten past that first major hurdle in how to read this Agadita. The next move that everyone wants to do with this Agadita is, oi, there's a stira. Oh, God. Right? I'm telling you, should I give you source sheets? I'm like, no, I don't want to traumatize you. I'm just going to put them on my page so I can look at them. Okay? The next one was, oi, there's a stira. Because in the Zohar, the contradiction, because in the Zohar, it says the world is created with a bet.
Oh, man.
Which I tell you, right?
I emailed
Rabbi Yitzi Blau, Rosh Hashiva to write, and I'm like, do you have any insight into this Gemara? And he's like, nope, most people who learn Agadita learn that first Agadita on the page. Right? That was his answer. That's basically what there is. I agree with him, but I was going to be brave and try to understand this Gemara. Anyway, so the second methodological move is just like with Halacha. The next thing you do after you try to understand the Gemara is say, okay, but it has to work with other statements. And there are Midrashim and many statements in Zohar that say, okay, the world is created with a bet. So now the person go crazy. I don't even know what this Gemara means, but whatever it means, it says the world is created with a hay, which is wrong. The world is created with a bet.
Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the Zohar was
Now, by the way, you think...
Side note.
Now, it's worse. It's worse because if you continue in the Zohar, it's not just the world was created with a bet. The reason the world was created with a bet is because the letters got into an argument with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yes, exactly, and bet won. Okay? Which does not make this any better for me.
Bet not say anything?
I don't know. It's like,
no,
bet won, Har Sinai won. Don't ask me what any of this means. Okay? Yeah. So the Bnei Binyamin, who I don't know who this is, I got a lot of this from the Masifta here because I just gave up on trying to find things myself. I was like, what am I going to do? He says, um, he comes up with this Kabbalistic notion, again, I don't know what this means, that every of the other letters is somehow attached to the letters of Shem Hashem, and somehow Bet is the Yud and the Hey emerge from the Bet. If anyone knows what I said, you can tell me later. Yes.
No. I get it, I might understand. But it's not like perfect.
Yeah.
Sense.
I don't understand what it means, but I understand literally what it means.
Yes. Okay, good.
Like a head.
No, he means metaphysically. I don't know what this
means. You like this, and then
the steel
this
hay,
over here is the here, and this is that, and that's the
here. This represent the metaphysical concept.
Yes. Alternatively, you have other ones that say, first God created it with Bet open to the north.
Can you write it like that?
But then he wanted the Rishayim deal to get in, so he created the hay for another part of the world. I don't understand what any of this means. Okay, good. Let's move on. Now, let's turn. We don't have so much time, so it'll probably take us one more week. Let's turn. Once we've gotten past the letter hurdles, now let's try to understand the lessons that the Gemara teaches from these letters, okay? So, how much time do we have? What time is it?
9:40.
Oh, we have time. Okay, good. So, once you get past that, the messages of the hay are actually quite interesting, right? There's actually, whether you think this is pshat or homiletics, the moral lesson is actually quite powerful. So what does the Gemara say? Why was the world created with a hay? So the Gemara says, it's created with a hay to either because metaphysically this is true or homiletically. Again, we've just moved past that point, right?
Or literally,
or whatever. To tell you that if Rishayim want to leave, they can leave.
I mean, like, kill yourself?
No.
What?
They can leave the way of goodness.
That's what I thought. Leaving this world.
No.
Hay is...
No, that was my first thought as soon as you said it, like, read the Gemara.
So what is the message of this Agadata? Very simply, it's actually not a very complicated message. What's the message of the Agadata?
Free will,
thank you. That's really correct. Meaning, after you've gotten through this, the message is that there's free will. And the Gemara is actually making a powerful point. Now again, whether you think this is metaphysical or homiletical, it's saying that the nature of this world is heinous, meaning nothing actually constrains you from dropping down, right? Or going up, right? Right, meaning you want to leave, you want to go down, you want to go down to all the things that are down, right? What? Whatever. Go ahead. Right, meaning, but think about how the Gemara is actually making a very powerful philosophical point. It's not just that free will exists. What's it saying? By saying that the world was creating behei.
It's essential.
And the hay reflects free will. What's it saying?
It's essential.
Yes, that the fabric of the world is that there is free will. Right, that's actually a very powerful philosophical statement. And whether you think that this is a metaphysical claim, that the world is created with heinous, and heinous is free willness, right? Or you think that it's a homiletic, but the meaning of the homiletic is the world was created and built into its very fabric is the notion of free will, right? That's a very powerful point. That's a very important philosophical point.
There's no free will, though, in the good world.
Very good. Yes, thank you. That's exactly the point. Right, free will is done. That's exactly right. Now, this is a very generic way of interpreting it. But as we know, in every Agadata, you can choose, even if you're going to take it homiletically, allegorically, whatever, you still have options. What are your methodological options? You can choose it to be representing a generic idea, right? And this is what this is the way the Eitz Yosef understood it, what we just said. But remember, we saw as last week as well, there's another way of reading it, which is coded. Meaning, this isn't a generic idea, it's a specific idea. The Marsha takes it that way. Because the Marsha says, no, it's not just that the world is free will. You know what it is? The world has free will. Pointing north. Why north?
Because north is to the left of east, and east is what.
Yes, I know, but I'm trying to figure out how he got this.
But
that should be
east is considered straightforward.
But that should be
the halachic position is facing east, and whenever forward is or up is facing east.
And
in that case, left, which is the side of the hay, would be.
I'm not even sure what this is.
But yeah, left in general is...
Yes, I know, and this is left. But you're learning right. You're turning right. No, to leave the world, you're turning right. You're going down the bottom.
To it in hay?
Yeah. You leave through the bottom, according to the Gemara.
No, I said you can leave.
No. You come back through the up. You haven't gotten there.
It says you can leave through either way you want. It says you can leave through the bottom or you can leave through the side.
No, you leave through the bottom, come back.
You leave through the bottom, come back to the top.
Come back
to the side.
Side. Top side, whatever.
There's two holes.
Yeah, there's two holes.
You go from back.
So you're a rusher, you go down.
You do chuba. You do chuba. Yeah. One second, let me read this. Let me see if I got it. One second. Let's see if I got it. Okay, he says. One second. Okay, I'm not really sure how he thinks you're leaving through the north. I'm not quite clear on this. But his argument is that north in Gemara, based on the Gemara in Bava Basra, the Gemara says that if you want to be rich, you should daven facing a little bit north.
Oh, yeah.
And he therefore says that, again, I don't really know how he's getting north, but however he reads it, right, he's saying that therefore this means not just when you go off the derech, so to speak, he's saying the reason often is because you're turning north, meaning you're turning after monetary wealth. I'm not sure how he got to this point, but I know methodologically what he's doing, right? He's trying to read this coded specifically. How he got there, I really don't know. The next point... One second. Yes. Okay. The next point, I think, is actually... This is one that I actually do somewhat understand. Which is the Gemara then says, okay, so the hay teaches you that you can... If you want to do bad things, you can, right? There's space in the hay. But if you want to do tshuva, you can come back in, but through the top. And the Gemara says, why through the top? Just crawl back in through the bottom. And the Gemara says, it won't work. Why won't it work? Good. Someone explain to me philosophically what the Gemara is trying to teach me.
Probably that, more homiletically than philosophically.
Good, homiletically. Yeah, meaning, fine. What is the philosophical idea? Whether this is shot in the hay, what is the philosophical idea the Gemara is telling you whether it's really about the hay or not?
Going down is like doing a vera, let's say. Whatever that
good, and why can't you come back and do tshuva the same way?
Because you can't.
You have to fix yourself. You have to fix the problem that you had that caused you to sin.
You can't do like the same thing.
Good. And right. Exactly. This is, by the way, I think the strongest shot is the Marshas is based on the Rambam, but based on the Gemara, which is, think about what the Gemara says about tshuva. How do you do tshuva? You change your name. You change your identity. You change your place. I mean, you change who you are. What does that mean to change? You got to
do something different.
So Marsha says, you know what the Gemara is telling you? You know what pshat in the Gemara is? What the philosophical idea is capturing? Again, it may be homiletic that it's a bet of hay. But the idea that it's talking about is actually powerful, which is, you want to do tshuva, you can't just retrace your steps. You've got to strike out a different path. That's what the Rambam tells you. That's what the Gemara tells you. Right? Change your name, change your place, right? And what does the Rambam say? You say to God, I'm not that person. Right? That means don't just retrace. That means you've got to start something new. That's what the Gemara is telling you. It doesn't work. Another possible pshat is that, no, maybe. It's not saying you could never come in through the bottom. It's saying... You can't always come to the bottom. And what would that mean philosophically? That there are different ways of doing tshuva. Right? There can never be only one path to tshuva.
It says it wouldn't work, though.
Right, so maybe it won't always work. Then you have to read it as not always, or something like that. Okay, right, you could read that. But again, I think the strongest read is what the Marsha said, which is what Oren said. Right? Is that the idea it's trying to capture is that, right? One second. Was it the Marsha who said that, or was it someone else? The Rajba is the one who says that it's simply that there are two entrances. Right, this is the Rajba, and the Yuchasim the Rajba, really. The Pshat... Yes, so it was the Marsha. Right, the Marsha is the one who says what Oren says. Is that, and right, he says, right, what does the Rambam always say? That if you sinned, what do you have to do? You have to go to the other katzeh, Right? You can't just move to the right. The Rambam says about midot, right? That if you are right angry, you can't just move to the middle path. How do you cure yourself? Go to the opposite extreme and then come back to the middle, right? The Rambam says, right, the way of tshuva is to change a new path, and you can't just try to undo what you did. You have to sometimes go to the other extreme, and then you'll be able to come back. But the point is, right, there is this radical change, so to speak, metaphorically, going in a different entrance, right, doing something different. And right, that's the Marsha's pshat here. So that's second pshat. The Pesach Einayim has another interesting suggestion, is what the homiletic means, and he says, the in a hay, right, the bigger hole is the one at the bottom, right?
Okay.
I mean, it is, right? I mean, in the Torah, right? I mean, okay, look at the Torah, okay? It's bigger, right? There's one side is a smaller entrance. And he argues that this is also Maimonidean, that what it's saying is don't, whatever. He says that the pshat here is that you shouldn't go too extreme. Right, meaning to try to change everything at once doesn't really work. Right, you have to come in through the small entrance first. Right, that's the idea he's getting. And again, homiletic.
What does that mean?
Right,
you have to change
meaning
a little at a time. You can't.
Right,
you
meaning
can't
you have to. Right, you can't just expect that everything's gonna happen once. Right, you go back in the right. You want to tshuva. It's a long process. You have to crawl in, so to speak, through the small. Again, these are all homiletic, but you actually see the philosophical idea they're getting at. And whether you think that's because the world's actually created with heinous, and this reflects the metaphysics of the world, or you just think that it's trying to teach you lessons using the hay as a nice homiletic, it's actually the lessons that it's teaching you, when you think about it, are quite, right, quite in important. The Tomer Devora suggests that part of this is that the hay sort of looks like a fence, right? Sort of like, you know, a multi-part fence, and he says that the pshat you learn from this is that the only way for tshuva to succeed is that once you're in, right, you set up gedarim for yourself, right, and that's the image it's trying to. Again, any of these, do I really know what they mean exactly? I don't. But the philosophical idea is, right, what do you say? And this is, I think, an important methodological point to make, which is when we say something is a homiletic, right, it's just a shul, right, shal shuras Torah. We don't mean the ideas aren't important. What do we mean? They don't actually emerge. Right. The derivation is just like cute to make you think. Right? It's not really pshat. That doesn't mean the ideas aren't important. They are. Right? The idea is that tshuva should be taken in steps. That in order for tshuva to succeed, you have to set up gedarim. That tshuva can never be, right, simply retracing your steps. It means taking a new path. Right? That there are multiple ways, right, to do tshuva. You have to come in from different angles, right? All those are true, right? Those are true reflections about the nature of tshuva. They may not be why a hay looks like it the way it is, but the ideas are true, right? And that's what a good homiletic is, right? A bad homiletic is where the homiletic is bad and the lesson they're teaching is wrong, right? That's a bad homiletic. A good homiletic, right, is something that is beautiful, not necessarily pshat, but teaches you true things, right? These are at least good homiletics, right? Chazal, right? We should give Chazal credit where credit is due, right? Their homiletics are at least good. But again, because, as I said, right, the goal this year is not just to understand Agadatos, but to make methodological points that we know how to look at Agadatos, right? Just think about the methodological points we've seen, right? First of all, is you always have to ask, is it literal? If it's not literal, so what is it? Metaphorical, right? Metaphysical, right? Physical, what is it, right? And then once you deal with that, you have to figure out, okay, how is this in conversation with other Agadot, right? And then you have to figure out, okay, well, let's say, I assume it's not literal, it's just a homiletic. Okay, but fine, so this is not pshat. But what is the lesson Chazal is trying to teach me? That's still important. And then, just like with anything else in Chazal, you would have to, you'd have to really try to understand, oh, you know what, we actually will finish. So let me just make, there are a few more points the Gemara makes here. The Gemara at the end, right, says, wait, look, it says a bunch of things, right? In addition, it says, look, the Olam Haba doesn't have so many tzaddikim, I think, right? That's, you know, the Rambam would tell you the same thing, right? Whether that emerges from the Yud or not, the Rambam would tell you, yeah, it's really hard to be a tzaddik. Most people don't actually really make it into Olam Haba. And then the Gemara says, and by the way, when the tzaddikim get there, they're somewhat ashamed of other people. Why? There's not one way of being a tzaddik, and therefore everyone looks at each other and says, right, I'm ashamed because he's better than me in a certain way. There's a deep truth to that, right? That there's not one way of being a tzaddik, right? Then the Gemara goes on to say that ilam laleitzim hu yalitz. Now, this is a big machlokas. What does it mean, im yalitzim hu yalitz? Does that mean that God actually pushes you to be like a scorner or a jokester or something like that? That would be weird. So, the Rajba notes that it can't mean that God actually helps you do Averot, right? What it means is he allows you to do it, right? He gives you the opening and then you do it yourself, right? And it therefore doesn't mean that God makes you a litz. It means hu yalitz, right? Meaning he just allows you, right? And that's what he says, right? You can't see this as a lack of free will or God actually aiding sin. What it means is that God, right, gives you the ability to pursue sin. Then the Gemara adds what is a very classic principle, which is that if you want to do good, Hashem will help you. So Nachlat Yaakov notes that this is really connected to Chazal's claim that if it weren't for the fact that Hashem helped you, right, it would be basically impossible to really, really be a tzaddik, and that's part of what this this means. And when it says that God opens, right, it means that God how do I say this? Right, meaning he says you have to note the difference that let's try that again. The Nachal Yaakov is a very important philosophical point. He says, note that there's a very subtle linguistic difference that the Gemara says between Ra and Tov. Right? For Ra, it says that what? If you want to do bad, God opens the door for you. And if you want to do good, God helps you. So what is that telling you?
One of them is allowed, one of them is supported.
Right, so he takes a bit of a different direction. He says, you want to do bad things, God doesn't need to help you, he just needs to let you. Right? Meaning it's much easier to do bad. Right? The imagery is that, remember, doing bad things is really easy. So, kivyachal, God just got to open the door and the rest is up to you. Doing good is really hard. And it's, right, and therefore, at some level, we really need divine assistance in doing good. And that's why it says, if you want to do good, God will help you. If you want to do bad, God will open the door. And that subtle linguistic difference is getting at this point. There are five perushim. Let's see if I can do this quickly as to what it means that there aren't so many tzaddikim, and what the Gemara is getting at. The Rashba says that it just means that there are more rishayim than tzaddikim. That's what it means. Okay, that's possibility one. The other possibility is that the reason that the world is created is because the world is created for those tzaddikim, right? And therefore you hint at it by putting that yud in the discussion of the creation of the world. Right, he says, right, Bishvil, right, Sha'olam Abban Nivra, Bishvil Atzikim Shanasidim Lamod Bo, Lokach Ishlam Shil Os Yud, Bishvil Lermoz, Bavur Mihu Nase. What it means is that the world was created for the Yud, right, is not just that the Tzadikim go there, is that that's why the world was created, so that those few people would go to Olam Haba. That's the second shot, right? This notion, the world is created with the Yud, is saying this is actually its purpose for those Tzadikim. That's another lesson that he learns from it. The Marsha simply says that this is Gemara is in consonance with the Gemara in Sukkah that explicitly says that there just aren't so many people who will be makabel pnei Ashchina, but they are very important. Fine. Another possibility, Marsha says, it's not just that they're few, but they act as if they're small. Right? They act as anavim, as humble people. With anafa, let's put that. And then the Ein Yaakov takes a more mystical approach here, that the reason it's a yud is because there are 10 tzaddikim that protect every generation. Don't ask me what that means. Fine. At any rate, that is actually all I wanted to say on these Agadot, but I think you see again, several methodological points in the types of mood they make on each level in the Sagarata. I can't promise I understand exactly every move they make, but again, it does highlight all the right. I think we've seen a few methodological things again about mystical readings, metaphysical, right, metaphorical readings, allegorical readings, homiletic readings, how you read homiletic readings, how you teach philosophy homiletic readings, v'chulei. Okay, shkoyach, guys.